You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN. I'm Ava Berardi. Pacific Seafood has acquired the distribution component of Ocean Beauty Seafoods. The acquisition comes as the West Coast seafood giant has pushed further expansion. Industry news site Seafood Source reports Pacific Seafood recently launched a brand refresh and opened its first office in Europe. The merger includes Ocean Beauty's locations in Astoria and Portland in Oregon, as well as locations in Washington State, Idaho, Montana, and Texas. It does not include a location in Salt Lake City, Utah. Financial details of the Ocean Beauty acquisition were not disclosed. Pacific Seafood says operations will remain focused on serving customers with reliability and consistency they depend on, while providing access to Pacific Seafood broad resources and network. Longtime Ocean Beauty Seafoods investor Michael Link described the merger as a complementary combination of the two companies. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Chinook Observer, online at chinookobserver.com.
I'm Katie Frankowitz. You're listening to News on KMUN. An Astoria-based organization that provides advocacy and support for survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault is expanding. The nonprofit announced Monday it has purchased a downtown building that, until recently, housed the Astoria newspaper. Executive Director Terry Steenbergen says the harbor received a generous donation that allowed the organization to make a down payment on the historic building on Exchange Street. The organization is still in the early stages of planning, but harbor representatives say the building acquisition is an opportunity to better serve survivors while preparing for the organization's future needs. Over the coming weeks, the harbor plans to meet with partners, supporters, and community leaders and other stakeholders to gather input on the organization's long-term vision.
Tillamook County will seek state general fund dollars from the Oregon legislature for court renovations. The renovations are expected to cost around $5.3 million. The top priority in the renovation project would be making room for a statutorily required update to circuit court spaces. The draft for the funding request is due at the end of the month, while plans for development will be discussed at a future meeting. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Tillamook Headlight Herald, online at tillamookheadlightherald.com. Oregon will soon have a new framework for managing its state forests for the next 70 years. The state's new forest management plan outlines how Oregon will balance logging, recreation, and conservation interests across 640,000 acres. They include the Clatsop and Tillamook forests in western Oregon. Some Oregon Board of Forestry members worried about the recent changes to the U.S. Endangered Species Act. But Oregon State Forester Casey Casey said they should move forward with the state plan.
Regardless of a federal law, how does Oregon want to manage our forests going forward in a responsible way that provides those economic, social, and ecological values?
The Trump administration's push to reduce endangered species protections faces multiple challenges and could be overturned. Federal researchers say there's an 80% chance of a very strong El Nino pattern by this fall. KUOW's John Ryan reports on one surprising impact it could have locally.
For the Pacific Northwest, El Nino boosts the odds of a warm, dry winter, a meager snowpack, and bad wildfires. It also boosts ocean temperatures. When seawater, or any liquid, gets warmer, it expands. That's why climate change has been raising sea levels. A big El Nino can swell the ocean enough to raise sea level by about a foot. That means flood-prone coastal areas could have a rough winter. Congresswoman Emily Randall is urging the Trump administration to speed up its long-delayed funding to help cities near Grace Harbor with their flood defenses. A federal judge in December ordered the administration to restore that funding. Randall says Aberdeen and Hoquiam have waited long enough, with more than 2,000 properties at risk of flooding. I'm John Ryan reporting.
Earlier this month, the Trump administration drastically changed how the country protects endangered species. OPB's April Ehrlich reports on what this means for Oregon.
For years, Oregon has been working on new ways to log state and private lands without violating the Endangered Species Act. They're called habitat conservation plans. They set aside specific areas for conservation while allowing logging elsewhere. Then the Trump administration changed what it means to harm an endangered species, potentially allowing logging and other projects to destroy sensitive habitats. Mike Wilson is State Forest Division Chief for the Oregon Department of Forestry. He says despite the change, Oregon land regulators are moving ahead with the plans.
I think everybody who actually works in this environment on a day-to-day basis is just waiting to see how things play out.
The change to the Endangered Species Act takes effect in September, but it faces multiple lawsuits. If the change does stick, it would likely render Oregon's habitat conservation plans obsolete. I'm April Ehrlich reporting.
The following story comes out of the High School Journalism Institute, a program that gives students hands-on experience in journalism, working alongside journalism professionals. One of the student reporters who worked on this piece was Sylvia Thorpe. Sylvia interned for the KMUN News Department last fall when she was a senior at Astoria High School. She did really excellent work for us, and we are very proud to highlight her continued successes in the world of journalism. If you are a student in KMUN's listening area interested in local journalism, don't hesitate to reach out. You can email me, News Director Katie Frankowitz, at katie@kmun.org. That's katie@kmun.org.
Morgan Young and her horse walk toward the arena to prepare for their barrel racing training session. Young is a 27-year-old competitor for the upcoming Larry Bell Memorial All-Girls Rodeo on July 29th. It's one of the only all-girls rodeos in the Pacific Northwest.
Which is pretty crazy, right?
It's really neat because we have this opportunity to host something like this that's so special, but it also is kind of wild that women don't have more of an opportunity to compete elsewhere.
Young has been competing in rodeos since she was around 6 years old. She now travels across the state to compete.
I have a sleeping pad in my truck, and I roll it out and lay it on the ground of my tack room, and that is where I sleep.
She was crowned Benton County Fair and Rodeo Queen last year. She also documents her journey online on social media.
With the whole idea that other girls out there might be able to see that and go, okay, I don't have to have the fanciest horse, I don't have to have the fanciest trailer to chase after my dreams and do what I really want, which is to rodeo.
Women-run rodeos allow competitors to participate in events that they've been historically excluded from. Nicole Schrock, the founder, pitched the idea for the Larry Bell Memorial Rodeo in 2018 in her first term as chair of the Benton County Rodeo Committee.
There is a pretty tragic backstory as to how women became excluded from rodeo that actually stems from an accident that happened at the Pendleton Roundup sometime in the early 1900s. And women were actually banned from rodeo for a really long time.
During the accident in 1929, a well-known bronc rider named Bonnie McCarroll was thrown off her horse. She later died as a result of her injuries. Some argued that bronc riding was too dangerous for women, and they were pushed out of competitions nationwide. They were only allowed to rejoin the barrel racing event at the Pendleton Roundup in 2000. Now, it's rare for women to compete in events like bronc and bull riding.
It took a couple decades before they started to find opportunities to become more involved. And those opportunities are the beginning of what we see now as modern-day barrel racing and rodeo queens.
Schrock says she felt it was important to bring back events women had been excluded from.
I think it's really important to give women the chance to have the same opportunities that men do. Rodeo has an incredibly rich and diverse history, and originally rodeo included women. They competed right alongside of men. It was a part of what that culture was, because it didn't matter if you're a man or a woman, you were capable of doing those ranch chores, those chores that then inspired rodeo events.
Back at the arena, Young pats her horse Lena affectionately. For a lot of the women competing, rodeo is just one part of their life. On top of competing in rodeos full-time, Young is also a veterinary assistant for Oregon State University and a student at Purdue.
I just want to encourage people to chase that dream and that passion, regardless of if it's rodeo or not, right? Even if it's a different sport. What is it that you truly love to do, and what is it that you really want to do, and apply yourself?
Young says competing in rodeo events isn't about winning. It's about doing what she loves. At the Benton County Fairgrounds, I'm Sylvia Thorpe.
Local and regional news is brought to you by our news partners and by the KMUN news team. For more local and regional news, go to kmun.org/news. American Democracy Minute is up next. You're listening to KMUN.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. A software design error in an automatic voter registration system, compounded by a slow New Jersey Motor Vehicle Commission response to correct it, apparently led to the voter registration of approximately 6,600 non-citizens. As many as 400 non-citizens subsequently voted. In her July 21st announcement, Governor Mikey Sherrill said that during the process of obtaining a legal non-citizen driver's license or state identification, those applicants were still offered an opportunity to register under the state's automatic voter registration system. Sherrill said that the software design error was discovered by the commission in 2023, but it was never made public. Compounding the situation, the New Jersey Motor Vehicle Commission took until 2024 to fix it. Sherrill said in a press conference, "It's unacceptable that the vendor released software with such a glaring error. It's unacceptable that the MVC took a year to get the issue fixed, and it's unacceptable that no one in the previous administration brought this to light, demanded accountability, or took action." Sherrill promised a full investigation, but said it does not appear the 400 non-citizen voters scattered across the state affected the outcome of any elections. She has also called for the termination of the software vendor's contract. We've linked to the New Jersey Monitor's reporting and the governor's press conference at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal. Find us on Blue Sky at Democracy Minute.